Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports Soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports, joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, broadcaster and analyst for CBS Sports. On today's segment, we are going to do a recap of the NWSL Challenge Cup semifinals. North Carolina Courage and Washington Spirit will meet in the Challenge Cup final. We've got a lot to get through here tonight, folks. Thanks so much for joining us live. Before we get into everything, a quick reminder to follow us on Twitter for all news and updates at Attacking Third. We also have a TikTok and an Instagram now. Follow us across all three platforms at Attacking Third for highlights, cool graphics, breaking news, and so much more. Once again, shout out to everybody joining us live on YouTube. Join the conversation in the chat. We see you're already active and waiting on us. We appreciate the time and patience as always. Hit subscribe at youtube.com/attackingthird. Lisa.
Sandra. We couldn't have written this up any better. I tried. I got to give a shout out to Motor City Sean in our chat right now saying that I had correct picks, which I did, but I could not have scripted it to go to that many rounds of penalty kicks. I mean, we just have to talk about it.
Wait a minute. Time out. We're going to dive into all the games, but we're going to dive into Spirit and Rain first. But I'm pretty sure that I chose Spirit to take this, but you chose PKs.
I did.
But you took the Rain in that one.
I know.
But listen,
I still knew it was going to PKs. There's just too much drama.
I was like, of course this is going to penalty kicks because Lisa said it would. I was like, oh my goodness. We put it on them. We put the jinx on them. Listen, let's talk about the soccer. Let's talk about the buildup to this game. Let's talk about how these two teams were going head to head once more in a knockout elimination type of match. I love this. Before we get into everything, I just got to say this right here for me, Rain, Spirit, this is a rivalry. This is like an organic type of like origin story that you have between these two clubs. And the fact that they tend to just keep meeting in these type of scenarios, this is the type of stuff that like rivalries is based on. Oh, it's not just sort of regional. I love that it's like two teams from completely opposite sides of the country. It's just such fantastic stuff. For this one, though, in the buildup to it, we chatted about it on the previews of this game, Lisa. We talked a little bit about the fact that Rain were the top seeded team in Challenge Cup. We talked about how there was overlap and frustrations and event conflict in terms of where this semifinal was going to be played. Rain, unfortunately, unable to play at Lumen Field because of the CONCACAF Champions League match that's taking place there. They scrambled to try to find somewhere else. The silver lining and mutual kind of beneficial thing there was, well, what if we tried to keep you both of these teams on the East Coast? Okay, let's play the game at Segra Field. Scratch that. We're not doing it. We're actually going to have it at Audi Field. There was a ton of buildup to this. And then they played each other just 2 days ago in the regular season. Rain losing that one 2-1, and then this semifinal coming down to penalty kicks.
Holy cow.
Let's start from the beginning. When we saw these starting lineups drop, Lisa, for example, did anything stand out? Did anything surprise you? Did anything just feel right to you when you saw the 11s for both of these teams?
I know this is our job, but I'm like, why can't we talk about the handball and the penalty kicks? But you're right. We got to start at the beginning. The starting lineups that rolled out. Yeah, we have to talk about it because there was rotation. And in our preview of these matches, we knew we were going to see rotation. Day ago, OL Reign and Laura Harvey put out that their injury report list was zip. Not a player listed as questionable, not a player listed as unavailable. And then just hours before kickoff of this OL Reign Washington Spirit match, Quinn, the midfielder, the engine for OL Reign, is listed out, which definitely changed things for OL Reign and Laura Harvey. Quinn's a player that can control a game. And I hate to say it, I think it would have been a different outcome if Quinn was playing for OL Reign. So Quinn unavailable. That's a dagger in the heart for any OL Reign player, fan, coach. And then looking at the starting lineup for Washington Spirit, we saw Ashley Sanchez get a start in the front line. No Andy Sullivan in the midfield as well. So starting sixes, defensive midfielders for both sides are out in Quinn and Sullivan. And I like seeing Sanchez a little bit higher up the pitch. However, I don't think that Washington Spirit controlled as much of the ball in the midfield without having Sanchez in there. It's almost like a double-edged sword. To play her up top alongside Hatch and Rodman is where Sanchez can thrive, and she has so much more freedom and flexibility in a forward line. But she controls so much of the play when she is in the midfield. So those are the things that stood out to me the bat. And having Kelly O'Hara get a start as well, because she was went out two matches ago with an injury. She only played 20 minutes in the last match that these two played in the regular season just last weekend. But O'Hara got the start, and Emily Sonnet back in the back line for Washington Spirit as well.
Listen, I looking at those starting 11s drop, I'm right with you. I think in the preview, we chatted a little bit about this. We said that with the quick turnaround for both of these teams coming off of that regular season opener to this Challenge Cup semifinal, player rotation is going to be something that's going to come into effect here for this match. Who is going to be available and why? Is the potential for limited minutes going to be something that we see play out? And we did, as a matter of fact, end up seeing that with certain personnel on the pitch. But I think the fact that you had Andy Sullivan and Quinn unavailable for either side of the ball in the pitch, we saw the midfield kind of that middle third was just I want to be as polite as possible here, but there were just some big key players missing there. And it was a struggle, I think, at times. I don't know if I would call it a game of real momentum swings by any means, but it almost felt like there were certain stretches of time during the regulation where either team struggled to really sort of take control of the game. I would say within the first 75 minutes of the match, quite frankly, because we saw some real momentum shift kind of come into play. But these two headed into halftime scoreless. It was 0-0 into halftime. Seeing OL Reign having less of the possession at this point and, watching the Spirit have more of it, but not doing as much with it, quite frankly.
That's a really good way to put it.
It was just a real mixed bag for me of like who, not so much of who wanted it more. Like it's very evident that both of these teams wanted to advance to the final, but there was just like, no one was actually like biting their teeth into this match and taking control of it. Now looking into the second half, I think is when we started to see some of these momentum swings a little bit, right?
Yes, I agree completely. I mean, possession wise, it just from the naked eye, if I'm not looking at any of my stats that I do have pulled up, but I'm not going to look at them because it was almost as if OL Reign was controlling so much of the game. And when Washington got the ball, they were just looking to push, which created really effective chances and dangerous looks. But OL Reign was controlling so much of the flow of the game. And in the pregame, and a lot of credit to Jen Hildreth and Ali Watt, they had a great call on this one. And the pregame, getting a little chat with Rose Lavelle of OL Reign about the last match against these two. And Lavelle saying, we didn't control enough of the game. I didn't find the ball as a midfielder enough to dictate the tempo and the pace of this game. And I'm going to do that so much better in this match. And that was a way pregame, like before warmups type of interview that happened. And then as we watched this game unfold, I was keeping a very close eye on Rose Lavelle because she's a player that can change exactly how she's going to play. And that's what she did. She didn't push herself so much higher, but instead dropped back to find the spaces in the midfield between Washington Spirit's Feist, Rodder, and Ulmer in that triangle in the midfield. And when Rose gets on the ball, she's just so much more dangerous, but she wasn't getting the ball and just looking to go forward, which we see Lavelle do so frequently. Instead, she was being that playmaker. She was really dictating how the play went, switching from side to side. The high press from both sides was really entertaining because it was just nonstop. Go, 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 go. Bethany Balser did a fantastic job being able to drive the defensive shape of Ullrich behind her. So as the ball comes in to the back line between O'Hara, Sonnet, Staub, and Bogalski for Washington Spirit, Balser sits in the middle, and whatever way the ball goes initially, she cuts off the entire other side, which tells the 10 other players behind her that the ball is going to stay on this left side of the field. That's where we trap, and that's where we win it back. And Washington was incredibly patient in trying to build that out, and that's why there was zeros at the end of this, at the end of the 90 minutes. But holy cow, we got to give a shout out to the goalkeepers. I mean, Fallon Tullis-Joyce, Aubrey Kingsbury, both sides. Tremendous game. These two had a tremendous game.
I don't want to come on here and butter my own bread, but look, when we're talking about making predictions and talking about things, when I had to write about this a little bit for CBSSports.com, I said that maybe the defense was actually going to be the stealing the headlines out of this match versus the attack. I mean, we've seen the highlights. We cover this league week in, week out. My goodness, daily. Sometimes it feels like right here on Attacking Third. Yeah. But Hatch, Sanchez, Rodman, for me, not really the stars of the show in this one. I think it really came down to sort of these defensive shapes from both sides, quite frankly, during this match. And then obviously with this game going to penalty kicks, looking at somebody like Aubrey Kingsbury, not only making a couple stops, but at one point stepping up and converting a PK of her own as we get into
the third one.
Oh my goodness.
The third one. It's not like she took the eighth or the ninth or even the fifth or the sixth. Aubrey Kingsbury took the third penalty kick for Washington Spirit, which means that she was going to take one the entire time. Also, Rose Lavelle took one. We had a conversation about that. Rose Lavelle had a penalty kick saved just a few days ago when these two teams played in the run of play. This time, Rose Lavelle steps up and buries her penalty kick in this one. So there's just so much to break down. But I mean, these goalkeepers, they did fantastic.
When I'm thinking of some of the end-to-end that we saw in this game, I don't know how much I could sit here and say that there was a lot of that. But this final 15 minutes of regulation, Lisa, Ullrich just refusing to allow this ball to exit the Spirit's half and just constantly staying and keeping a presence in the final third here. And we're building up and building up and building up. And it just sort of felt like at any moment there was going to be the break of this bend. And it just didn't happen for this Ullrich side. There was a moment right early in the second half where a goal was, you know, broke through, but it was called offside. The replay on that, Jess Fishlock, wildly offside on that one in terms of the camera angle and the delivery. Alana Cook at one point looking like that counted.
She scored it. And she was like, are we sure, guys?
About this? I love the body language and the reaction there. But these final 15 minutes, winning corners, winning dangerous throw-ins for the rain. You just almost wondered what was going to happen. But Aubrey Bledsoe making herself big, having a couple really big saves on Bethany Balser, some 1v1 opportunity at one point, forcing a different angle from the striker, going just wide. And you just wondered as the time kept winding down. And I kept thinking of you, buddy. I was like, oh, no, Lisa's prediction is going to come true. They're going to go straight to penalty kicks. But a very, very unfortunate moment that we absolutely have to spend a little bit of time chatting about, Lisa. We're talking about all of this movement and this action from OL towards the end of the game. And that includes
second half, Sandra, in the second half, 14 shots for OL Reign, 8 shots for Washington Spirit. That's just in the second half. And then when you look defensively, Aubrey Kingsbury had 8 saves in the run of play.
Big.
Huge.
Big. We're talking about other big things, and that includes moments of high drama. Stoppage time in regulation here. We have a moment in which many of us were watching this on the stream, unless you were lucky and fortunate to be able to witness this game live. That's a little bit of a different scenario. But the angles that we were watching on this stream, Lisa, we see a moment in the box where a ball is played in, and it's the final attempt for the game to get put away in regulation. At this point, multiple substitutions have been made for the Reign specifically. We're just going to center on them for the bit. We saw the return of Megan Rapinoe to NWSL action in this game. Laura Harvey in post-game comments, and we'll get a little more into that as well, admitting to the fact that Megan Rapinoe was put into this game for penalty kick situations, period.
Yes.
Confirmed. And here we have a moment.
A player coming back from an injury that probably can't run a lot. Like, there's so many different reasonings behind that, but a player that can knock down penalty kicks.
A stoppage time sub with a purpose.
Yeah.
And here is the potential for a moment to be decided in regulation. And what we saw on the cameras, Lisa, I don't think it's unfair to say this at all, was we saw a clear handball in the box. Talk to me as a defender. What's going on there?
This is a 100% an obvious handball. You can even tell from the look on Anna Helferty's face after it hits her hand and her hand ricochets away from her body from the force of the ball. She looks like, oh crap, I just did that. Like, let's just run. Let's just get the ball out, because you never want to make that face too known, because that's what the official is going to look at if they don't get a clear vision of what actually happened. And clearly this official did not. There was a lot of bodies in the box, and this handball happened on the far side of the field, and the sideline official referee was on the near side of the field. So there's probably like 7 or 8 bodies in between the sideline official and where Anna Helferty actually hit the ball with her hand. And of course, on the replay, we can see it clear as day as this is happening. I honestly have no idea how the center official missed this. It's almost like, even if you miss it, you can see the redirection of the ball, because as a ball that's being whipped into the box, all of a sudden comes to a slow bounce and Kingsbury can just gobble it up like a child hit the ball. No, it had to be slowed down somehow. The redirection of it by the handball, this was a really big mistake, a really big turn of events that ultimately went in Washington Spirit's favor.
It's a game changing missed call. 100%. I don't think that's unfair to say at all about this moment. Last I checked, I don't think you and I are going to be getting fined for talking about officiating in this game. But there were, again, we're talking about certain waves of the game, certain stretches of the game. And there were moments there where you could just sort of tell, like, perhaps this was it's a high competitive match. It's a knockout.
There's a lot round.
There's a knockout round game. And perhaps there's a bit of mentality amongst the officiating crew that, listen, these are two top teams. It's a knockout round stage. We're going to let them play. You know, there's these conversations.
That vibe throughout the entirety of the 90 minutes, because there was some chippy plays. There were some calls being made, a number of fouls being called, but not being whistled until the third one happening. This referee definitely let these teams play, but that's a handball. That is a 100% handball in the box. It changed the direction of the ball. It changed the velocity of the ball.
Changed the outcome of the game.
It changed the outcome of the game, but not, you can't even like base it on that, because rule wise, we got to get our rules expert in here, but rules wise, it, it changed the direction of the ball, which changed the outcome of that specific play because there was runners in behind. It's a different thing sometimes when it's like the ball is just going out anyway. I kicked it out and then it went off my hand. Like there are so many different ways you can look at that, but that was a clear handball that was missed. And that I understand why Laura Harvey is pissed off.
I respect the concept as an officiating crew that you understand that you're going into a highly competitive match that is has knockout that is a knockout game that means that someone's it's win or go home, and you want to try to call a fair game while letting the game play out. And there were multiple moments where you could see on both sides of the pitch that both teams were expressing some frustration at some moments during this game with the official. You're talking about some questionable, you know, yellows coming out after the fact or too late after the fact. I mean, my goodness, you're talking about a moment. We talked about this goal that was called offside. And this is a specific moment of the officiating that we can look at and point at and say, okay, this was a moment in which they huddled up, spoke about it. No goal allowed. It was offside. I do not understand why you have a near game-defining moment like this in stoppage time of regulation, and you do not take the same consideration as you would have in perhaps the hour mark of the game. It was just unreal body language for me to sort of be at home taking a look at and view. I didn't want to hear it. Did not want to hear it. Blew the whistle. You're done. You're done. We're going to PKs.
Yes, it's almost as if like his watch was going off, you know, like his timer was beeping and he looks down and he's like, well, I missed the handball. This is just Lisa speculating. I don't know what happened, but like, that's almost what it felt like, because how do you miss that? How do you not at least talk with your both sideline officials and say, did you guys see anything that this place is going crazy? Jess Fishlock's yelling in their faces. Yeah. Megan Rapinoe's in his face. Yeah. I don't understand what happened. It was bad.
Well, hey, listen, we may or may not know. Hopefully we have some great reporters on the ground who can maybe sort of get a chance to ask pro referees about that. We'll see what happens. But that was the scenario that set everything into motion for penalty kicks. And of course the penalty kick shootout wasn't something that was going to be easy going. It's already high drama when you go into a penalty kick scenario.
Of course.
But then you're talking about going to sudden death in a penalty kick situation. It was insane. Did you have any moments throughout this, Lisa, where you were like tipping one way or the other? Because there's moments of momentum that can take place even in a penalty kick shootout. Were there moments where you're like, okay, Rain have got this, and Spirit got this, and the Rain don't?
So I love this question, Sandra. This is really tricky for me, because watching these, I've seen Aubrey Kingsbury stop and be a goalkeeper against so many penalty kicks, and she always has this look on her face that is so determined, that is so badass, that is so, I'm going to take the third penalty kick no matter what. We're not getting to sudden death in these penalty kicks. I'm going to take one as a goalkeeper. I'm going to bury it, and then I'm going to stop all these other ones. And she had that look of determination on her face, which gives me as a viewer a lot of confidence in Washington Spirit and in Kingsbury. However, watching Fallon Tullis Joyce make all of these tremendous saves against these penalty kicks as a first-year player in this league, Tullis Joyce is a player that has done her research. She knows the opponents that she is going up against, and she watches the run-up to the ball, to which way the hips are moving. She didn't have it all on her face that, yeah, I can take any one of these players. It wasn't scared, though. It was almost just like a blank expression, which as I was watching this, at first I was like, yes, Kingsbury's got this. And then I'm like, wait, here comes Tullis Joyce just no emotion and being able to stop all of these. I was a little nervous for Rose Lavelle to take hers. I was a little nervous for Trinity Rodman to take hers, just chewing on the gum for Rodman. I was nervous watching this. Meanwhile, we got a whole other game happening too, coming down in the final minute. I was freaking out.
I know. I was with you. I know you and I both had our multiple devices. We were like messaging each other throughout these games. I'm with you though. It's a high, it's for even those of us who are just watching it, you know, it's a high tense situation. I was like, oh no. I was like, you got to have your lineups. You got to have this, these scenarios prepared. You only the coolest under pressure can do this. And then you see these very young players taking PKs. And I'm like, oh my goodness, it's just a baby. Like Trinity Rodman. I'm like, oh my God.
And even Fallon Tillis Joyce, this is a young player that is first year in the league and now has all this pressure on her shoulders to do this with Megan Rapinoe on the pitch as well. Like there's just so many different factors that come into this. Ultimately, it ends up being the longest penalty kick shootout in NWSL history. It is also the first time a goalkeeper has taken a penalty kick in a shootout. And Kingsbury, she shoots at third. And she makes two saves. This is the first time Washington Spirit win in a penalty kick shootout out of their three that they've been in. This is the first one that they have won. And now Spirit go to their second straight final.
I'm gonna ask you, Lisa, before we get into the next semifinal, if you had to name a breakout player or MVP for this game, who is it? Is it the obvious choice?
Yes, it's Aubrey Kingsbury. There's no question about that, Sandra. Next question.
let's do the post mortem for All Rain here in the Challenge Cup. Player for you that was maybe MVP of this team in the Challenge Cup.
Oh, that's a good question. Honestly, Tillis Joyce, she had a fantastic Challenge Cup, really broke onto the scene. And in the last match against Washington Spirit, I guess that was the regular season, but throughout the Challenge Cup just came up big time and time again. There wasn't one player for OL Reign that stood out because out of however many goals they scored, Bethany Balser is the only one that got two of them. Otherwise, it was spread out amongst players. There was a different starting lineup every single time Laura Harvey put her team out on the pitch in the Challenge Cup. The consistency really coming from Tillis Joyce, I'm going to say. I liked what I saw from her.
I love leaning into two goalkeepers, you know, as choosing them for both sides of the pitch here. I'm going to make a special case for Allie Watt as well. I really enjoyed watching what she was bringing for the Reign over the course of the Challenge Cup. I'm excited to see her continued development over the course.
We just got a taste from Watt.
And now we're going to hopefully get to see what she could do over a regular season with the Reign. But I'm with you, goalkeepers for me in this one as well. We've got one more semifinal to get through. And there were some exciting moments there, I think, that we're going to have to chat about as well. We got Kansas City and North Carolina Courage for you all coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Kansas City Current versus North Carolina Courage. We had the Central Region winners going up against the number 3 seeded NC Courage. Lisa, when we took a preview of this game for everybody, I think we both made the picks in this one. We were high on Kansas City Current during the offseason and heading into the Challenge Cup. But when it came down to making a pick for this game, we both went the way of North Carolina Courage, and they are the victors in this one. 2-1 closing out this semifinal. A rainy, wet, soggy affair in Children's Mercy Park at Kansas City. I just, watching it, I had the thought where I said, if I'm watching this and I'm having trouble seeing,
yeah,
I cannot imagine what it's like playing in this if you're one of the players on the pitch and in a high stakes knockout game.
It's disgusting. I mean, watching that rain come down, there's so many different factors into it. I mean, yes, seeing is a huge factor. And then a night game in the rain, the lights that shine, it almost reflects off the raindrops, which creates glares across the field without anything in the way there, just the rain. So that happens as a player. Your jerseys are also incredibly wet and heavy. So you run a lot slower. Your cleats are just soggy and full. Like, there's just so many factors that go into it. And I know that JP and Lori Lindsay were talking about this on the call as well. There's so many different reactions to the turf as the rain is coming down, in the fact that the pitch can either get really heavy and soggy and slow the ball down, slow the play down, slow runs down. As a human, you can't run as fast in the rain when the turf is that wet. But if it's a lighter rain and the pitch is just slick enough, the ball moves incredibly fast. It skips on the ground. And the most difficult part that was happening throughout this Kansas City Current, North Carolina Courage game is that the rain was fluctuating. It was pouring down really hard for minutes and spans at a time. And then it was getting lighter, which gave the illusion that it was maybe going to stop or it was going to stay light. So the ball speed was actually fluctuating throughout the 90 minutes of the game. And I also heard that it wasn't downpouring during the pregame warmups. That really only started once kickoff happened, which changes everything. I mean, the elements play a factor. However, both teams have to deal with the elements. So it plays a factor up until a point, and then you just got to deal with it.
I want to start similarly as we did when we were talking about rain versus spirit. Let's chat a little bit about the buildup to this match. Not a lot, not as much off the field action in terms of who was going to host and where, and if there were problems with stadium logistics or anything like that. Once the seating shook out the way that it did, you knew KC was going to host. No conflicts there. Children's Mercy Park, North Carolina Courage on the road. When we're looking at the starting lineups for this one, though, Lisa, when they both dropped, again, when we were doing our previews, we're like, quick turnaround, who's going to be available, who's not going to be available. For the North Carolina Courage side of things, I was really excited to see somebody like Dana Ordonez get the start in this match. Ordonez having, coming off of this CONCACAF qualifiers and really kind of, I think, introducing herself to a larger audience, right? An audience that's beyond perhaps the American collegiate game, if the audience that watches that, or even just the NWSL for that matter. And with the quick turnaround, I think, again, we knew we were going to see some player rotation. So to sort of see her get slotted in with Smith on the bench, I was okay with that. I'm very excited with what we're seeing from somebody like Taylor Smith this year. But giving a player like that a shot and tasking a young player with a start in a knockout game, I think is a huge vote of confidence, I think, for that type of player. And I think we saw that out on the pitch today from her. And I think on the Kansas City side of thing, I think you and I could both agree, seeing Mace available off the bench, I think, was a plus. But knowing that maybe she wasn't able to go a full 90 was going to be something that was going to impact Kansas City side of things. What were some of your impressions when you saw these 11s?
You're exactly right. For Kansas City, it was Haley Mace. That's exactly who I keyed in on when I saw the availability report. And at that point, I was thinking that Mace was going to start, that a player that is on limited minutes, it depends on the training staff and what they want to do and what's best for that player's recovery. But a lot of times it's you do the entire warm-up and then your body's warm, your muscles are ready to go, you feel good, you start the game, and then you can come out whenever. So to not see Mace in the starting lineup, I was a little bit surprised to see that as well. But when we look at Matt Potter's side for Kansas City Current, he went with a three back in this match, whereas he switched throughout the Challenge Cup, but most recently played a four back against Portland, and that didn't work in the regular season. So I see why he switched here. But having a rookie in Jenna Weinbrenner out on the wing. He's pushing Alex Luera, who has been a center back throughout the Challenge Cup, higher up the pitch. She's playing in that six role for Kansas City because she has such great distribution of the ball. When she has it at her feet, she can find her players, and she's a really good passer. So he moves her higher up the pitch just to create a little bit more possession for Kansas City. And sitting in alongside Desiree Scott, it seems like a good battle. I actually really liked what we saw from Alex Luera throughout this match. But also Victoria Pickett for Kansas City getting the start. I was really pleased with that. I know you mentioned Diana Ordonez for North Carolina Courage. I love watching this player. I'm really happy she got the nod at start. And also Gray in the midfield. She got the start alongside Speck, O'Sullivan, and Dabinia in that midfield box unit for Sean Nahas. And I like what I'm seeing from these players. There's no Pickett back for Kansas City, but Merritt Mathias and Jaylene Daniels out on the flanks for North Carolina, which has been usual to see them there. So, but yeah, Haley Mace was probably the biggest one for me, seeing her availability.
Yeah, same. I think it caused some fits immediately for Kansas City. We're talking, it took just under 20 minutes for North Carolina to go ahead and get the breakthrough and sort of crack open this goal scoring, but it came by way via penalty. Maybe that was a little bit of foreshadowing for the other match that was happening right alongside of it. Both of these games only separated by a half hour of kickoff time here. But listen, let's center in a little bit about how this came to life. Brazilian international Caroline Nicoli just causing fits, just causing fits on the pitch, rain or shine, quite frankly, winning the penalty here in this match. This is the third penalty in the Challenge Cup that this player has earned for her club already, and now doing it in a knockout round scenario. Just, you could just see it in this player that she's going to be causing some headaches for back lines across the league as the regular season continues to get underway. And this sort of magical partnership between her, Caroline, and her compatriot in Debinha, just, you go out there and you go win those PKs, and you know what? I'll step up and I'll just put them away. Like, what?
That's exactly what happened, because Caroline gets it. She draws, it's the third one, as you mentioned. She draws in the Challenge Cup. This is the third one Dabinia has taken. She went 2 for 3 in knocking down those penalty kicks, but Dabinia scored her fifth goal in the Challenge Cup in this match. That's the most in history for a Challenge Cup. So congratulations to Dabinia there. I love some fun facts, stats for everyone. Caroline is going to continue to draw penalty kicks, and it is because she is fearless with the ball in the box, and defenders don't know when to step on her. Because as a defender, as if there's a forward doing a lot of step overs, trying to get around you, trying to get a cross in or a shot off or to lay the ball off, and you're already inside the box, you can't let that happen. You can't let the shot get off. You can't let the cross get off, or you can't let them make a pass. So as a defender, you have to step at some point and try to make that tackle and go in hard, slide tackle the ball out, do something. But because Caroline is so quick with her feet and she just dances on top of the ball, she gets out of it. She actually flicks the ball over the defender's feet 9 out of 10 times. If you go back and watch it, it's so impressive. And because of that, then the defender fouls her. So this is going to be a theme throughout Caroline's reign in the NWSL, drawing penalty kicks. And then, of course, Dabinia to just step up behind her and be able to nail them down. I mean, you could see it as soon as it happened. Caroline knew, like, yep, I got a penalty kick. And Dabinia was like, yep, I'm going to put it away.
Yeah. And you know, and you just 19 minute, right? This is very early in the game, the buildup to this penalty kick. But then you also have this go ahead goal that takes place for the Courage just past the half hour mark. We see this awesome sort of sliding run into the box by Ordonez to sort of just get like a shin guard on it, right? And it just finds its way into the back of the net to give the Courage a 2-0 lead. And I listen, maybe it was just the crummy weather or knowing the injury reports ahead of this game, but I felt for Kansas City in this moment. I felt like that first half was a little bit more even at times than the scoreline actually alluded to. When you're looking, like, let's say if you have both games going on, you just happen to check in on what's going on in the Courage and you're like, oh, 2-0, like they're putting it away. But exactly. You know, we're looking at some of these first half stats. You're talking 8 to 9 shots, you know, the Courage just winning the edge in that, 3 shots on target for KC versus 4 from the Courage. Just, I don't know if I would want to sit here and say unlucky, but it just definitely felt maybe like the game in the first half was a little bit more even than the scoreline alluded to. And I had wondered going into the second half if maybe a little bit of, you know, okay, let's regroup, let's hit the reset button, let's see what happens in the second half, that maybe that would have benefited Kansas City. And we did see them get one back.
Yes, ultimately we did. I think the first 45 minutes, it is a bit deceiving to see the scoreline and kind of see how the match unfolded, because Kansas City had a lot of really good possession. They had a lot of really good moments. They were creating opportunities. They were being quick in their attack, but then also being patient in the buildup in those moments when they needed to. But it was sloppy mistakes. The first goal that came from the penalty kick, it was turned over out of a sloppy misplay in the back, and Caroline was able to pick it off. And then she's already 3/4 of the way down the field, just 20 yards outside of the 18-yard box. And that's how she draws the penalty kick. So it was mistakes that North Carolina was able to capitalize on, which has been an incredible theme for North Carolina throughout the Challenge Cup. And really what we're seeing is that they don't get as many chances maybe as other teams, but they sure do put them away, and they sure do capitalize on moments when other teams are on their heels. And that's what we saw heading into the second half for this match. Things changed a little bit because Kansas City was down 2-0 at the halftime. They needed to switch momentum. They needed to change what was happening. A slew of substitutions happening, one of them being Haley Mace coming in, and one of them also being Lola Bonta coming in. These two players, Mace and Labonta, that changed things for Kansas City, because Mace and Labonta can control a little bit more of the ball possession tempo that Kansas City is looking to have, whether it's swinging the ball from one side to the other or moving the ball from back to front of the field and getting higher up the pitch. Here is where Kansas City created a lot more chances, and they had a lot more moments of opportunity. That you asked me before about momentums and waves in games. Yeah. Throughout the second half, there was a lot of waves where I thought Kansas City was going to get one, and not necessarily incredible shots that were just missing or that Caitlin Rowland was just saving. I mean, she did have incredible saves, but it was more just like they had so much possession and they had so much momentum that it was almost just waiting for it to come. And ultimately it did. Kansas City did have a breakthrough and they were able to get one goal back on North Carolina's 2.
Yeah, and it came via substitution, quite frankly. Yep. Like things like that, like, you know, player personnel, mid-game adjustments are the things that could perhaps sort of turn or change those waves of momentum. And we saw Addie McCain come on in for Elise Bennett, and just a few moments, just minutes later, connecting with Kristen Hamilton to try to get one back.
And you knew it was going to be Kristen Hamilton. You knew it was going to be Hamilton.
I mean, at this point, who else is it going to be in the game? At least Bennett got subbed out. And we're talking about injury reports, right? And how it's impacted all of the teams, quite frankly, all final four of the clubs in these Challenge Cup semifinals. Yeah. But, you know, whether we're talked about Kansas City, but, you know, also on the Courage side of things, they've been without Casey Murphy, Carson Pickett, who was outstanding for them in 2021, sort of navigating her way through some injury right now. Kiki Pickett as well. And then knowing that Lynn Williams is out for the remainder of 2022 with a season ending injury, and Sam Mewis is currently navigating a right knee injury as well. These are two big pieces for this current side, where maybe if you're looking at the roster and perhaps you're a neutral viewing this game, you're like, well, who is going to come in and be that person for the Current to try to come in a knockout round situation and try to maybe turn the game around a little bit. And for this one, it was Eddie McCain, quite frankly, coming on in to get this done. But unfortunately, it just maybe kind of came too little too late. The goal time was not on the side of Kansas City Current, which I think maybe is what we should chat a little about for their postmortem in Challenge Cup, because they are now officially out. Their focus will be on the regular season, but it just sort of fell again. We're talking about waves and shifts of momentum that maybe if there was a little bit more time left in this game, we would have possibly seen something else happen via the Current. But we just didn't see that play out. Ended 2-1.
I agree completely in with that, because poor Kansas City. I mean, this is a team that last year I had no hope or faith in them. I mean that lovingly, Kansas City. And they made so many great offseason changes and movement around. And even at the start of the Challenge Cup, we were high on them and we were excited for what Kansas City could do. And then to watch them throughout the Challenge Cup almost just run through the central region and say, we're here and we're going to make a name for ourselves. But they're just missing the extra pieces. And maybe that'll come with time. They have a lot of young rookies and a lot of good talent in those rookies, whether it's Weinbrenner or Luera or Bennett up top, Rodriguez. They have a lot of good pieces, but they just need a little bit more time. So maybe playing in the Challenge Cup and going up against the same competition twice in a short period of time really helped Matt Potter to be able to assess what his team needed to do better and what they could grow upon. And they have an entire regular season ahead of them, minus one game. So future is still bright for Kansas City. This is by no means a funeral for them at all, but North Carolina was the better team in this scenario. Caroline is fantastic. Her and Davinia together are just incredible to watch. This team's going to go on a run this year.
We'll see. Just to close it out for Kansas City, similarly like we did with Spirit and the Rain, when you're looking at Kansas City, who was maybe the MVP or breakout player for you for Kansas City during their Challenge Cup competition?
I really like Alex Luera. Yeah. I could say Kristen Hamilton, but she's a player that I know is really good and that has always been really good, and she will always put the team on her back. But
maybe Alex, MVP for her and breakout for Luera.
Fantastic player, a rookie coming into Kansas City, and she played in the back line and she did a tremendous job. And then even moving her into the midfield, she was able to do so much and control so much of the game. And as a rookie, that's really hard to do, especially when you're going up against a box midfield in North Carolina, even in this match in particular. I'm very excited to watch Alex Luera throughout this rookie year for her.
Yeah, I feel you on that for sure. I think if I'm looking for Kansas City Current during their Challenge Cup, MVP Hamilton for sure. She has been someone that they have relied on since they got her midseason last year, and it's just the continuation of that in 2022. But I really, really have enjoyed what we've seen out of Elise Bennett for the Current, a player who had an opportunity, quite frankly, and unsure if we're seeing this much of Elise Bennett if a player like Lynn Williams is available and healthy for Kansas City. But that's soccer sometimes for you. And we got to see some really good stuff.
That says more about Elise Bennett in a player that probably knew she wasn't going to get a lot of time. And then the opportunity presented itself and she has taken this opportunity and ran with it. Huge props to Elise Bennett for that.
Absolutely, 100%. We're looking at North Carolina Courage. They are moving on. No postmortem for them yet. But when we're looking at perhaps their group stage and this semifinal, who is the breakout player for you, or who's MVP for this North Carolina Courage side?
Well, I have a feeling we're going to say the same person, but I'm going to say Caroline.
For breakout?
Or MVP? Yeah. Both.
I'm going to say for both too. I've enjoyed watching her play so much during the Challenge Cup. It's been exciting. I think there's something about, obviously, I think you can make the case for the Davinia, but mm-hmm. she has become just this integral, essential player for the Courage. And I don't know if you could have told me 5 years ago that a Brazilian international was going to come to North Carolina and become this sort of integral face of the franchise type of player, I would have been like, stop pulling my chain. You just know that I'm here and I'm hyped and I get excited for all Latinas in the league. And then just stop yanking my chain. But that's where we're at. And this is the type of player who just sort of rises to these occasions, loves a big stage, loves a big sort of knockout game. And I love what she brings to this team. And 0% shocked that she ended up on the score sheet to close it out. So we will see. We've got Washington Spirit versus North Carolina Courage for the Challenge Cup final. Two teams coming out of the East region. Who would have thought? Here we are. I love it. I need to let everybody know before we close out this episode, we are going to have a live pregame show May 7th, 12:30 to 1 p.m. Eastern before the Challenge Cup final kicks off with Lori Lindsay, and we're going to be there for you in the post game as well. We love hanging out with you all. We love doing the live reactions. We love doing the live show. So make sure that you join us for the Challenge Cup final on May 7th. Thank you all so much for listening to Attacking Third. As always, you can follow us on Twitter and now on TikTok and Instagram at Attacking Third for so much more. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere you listen to your shows. We're also available as video. Hit subscribe at youtube.com/attackingthird. If you have any questions for us, I'm going to tell you how you can get them answered, because I know folks always join us on the lives and want to hit us with questions, but here's how you actually get them answered. You got to go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your question, and Lisa and I will answer it during a mailbag segment on Attacking Third. And Lisa and I will be back Wednesday following all kinds of NWSL action. We're going to be back to cover so much more for you all. For Sandra Herrera and Lisa Roman, this was Attacking Third.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast, and I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.